It's time for Senior Talk with Carol Higgins Taylor, a show designed with seniors in mind. Carol discusses everything from Social Security to senior housing, medication to Medicare, and so much more. And now, your award-winning host, Carol Higgins Taylor.
Hi, and thank you for joining me today for this edition of Senior Talk. Today, we're discussing caring for your veins, specifically varicose veins and wound care. My guest is Dr. Stephen Nightingale. He earned his medical degree from the University of Alabama, Birmingham, completed his dual residency in internal medicine and pediatrics at Bayside Medical Center, Tufts University in Springfield, Massachusetts. He's board certified in internal medicine, pediatrics, and laser surgery. He's been in practice for more than 30 years and has provided full vein care services for patients with chronic lower extremity venous disease, and this includes late-stage disease with venous ulcers, and we will talk about that. Dr. Nightingale practices at Bucksport Regional Health Center in their Ellsworth location, which is in Hancock County, which is, you could say down east. It's in eastern Maine for sure. Dr. Nightingale, thank you for being here today. It's a pleasure to talk to you about vein health.
Well, good morning, Carol. Thank you for inviting me.
Let's start with varicose veins. This is kind of a two-part question, but what causes them and at what age do they typically occur? I mean, if there is one, can someone who is older suddenly start getting varicose veins like later in life?
Well, varicose veins typically are the result of failure of small valves in the veins, which helps the blood move from the leg back towards the heart. So if those valves malfunction, then there's increased pressure in those vessels, and then they start to bulge and often become visible. Varicose veins can start at any age. I've had patients who are young adults that start having varicose veins. But we typically know that, you know, with advancing age, like most medical problems, varicose veins become more prevalent. But as I said, I've seen patients in their 20s whether it's from a hereditary sort of pattern or from an injury, a sports injury, might actually elicit the initial cascade of events that then leads to varicose veins.
What are the symptoms of varicose veins? I'm sure that it varies from just a little bit to a pretty impressive discoloration of the legs. But how do you treat that? And when do you treat it? Is it necessary that they do get treated?
Well, the first question, what are the symptoms? Actually, some patients have no symptoms. It's not uncommon for us to see patients who are just more concerned that maybe they have a medical condition that could be life-threatening or something that could happen later in life. So they just want to be reassured. But predominantly, most patients, when you really, you know, question them, are having some degree of symptoms, whether it's my legs feel heavy at the end of the day, they ache a lot at the end of the day, I get swelling. They seem restless. I notice that they get dry and scaly and itch. Usually you can tease out some degree of symptoms, but not always. Not everyone needs to have their varicose veins treated. So if they don't have symptoms, we talk more about, you know, how do you prevent this condition from progressing? We, as I said, we don't always treat varicose veins, but we do talk to the patient a lot about the prevention of further progression of the disease and what's within their scope to be able to help, prevent this from getting worse.
If someone is experiencing the symptoms that you described, the heaviness, leg aching, and you determine that it's varicose veins, can you have varicose veins without them showing up? So do patients ever get surprised that they're having these symptoms and you tell them you have varicose veins because they don't show?
Sure. That is definitely the case. Typically we think of these ropey veins that are on the surface that are easy to see. But you can have varicosities or varicose veins that are under the surface, not easily seen, but do have valvular dysfunction. And it really boils down to what's the anatomy that actually connects to these varicose veins. We typically call varicose veins superficial veins, but there are deeper veins in the system which really are where the pathology starts before the veins become visible. And that's really the key. So if a patient comes in and is having these symptoms that we described, but when we look at their legs, we don't see any varicose veins bulging on the surface, that doesn't preclude us from pursuing an evaluation for venous insufficiency in some of the deeper veins that are more of the supply side, if you will, to the varicose veins.
I can see why a patient would be very concerned if they didn't see a varicose vein, but they're having those symptoms. They probably think that something could be very wrong. That would be scary, I would think. So how do you treat them? Walk me through, if someone comes in presenting these symptoms, what's the first thing that you do?
Well, one of the things I was going to mention is that these symptoms are not entirely unique to chronic venous insufficiency or varicose veins. This is what makes the diagnosis sometimes difficult. It often is one of the reasons that the diagnosis is delayed, because most practitioners are not overly familiar with chronic venous disease. So if somebody presents to the office with pain in their legs, the first order of business often is, well, let's take a look. Do you have arthritis? Do you have a neurological problem, maybe stemming from a back injury? Is there a muscular issue going on? So the water can be pretty muddy at first and hard to tease it out. But usually, by the time patients find their way to us, particularly if it's through a physician's office, some of these other potential causes for the symptoms have been evaluated and there's been no answer. So the next step is pretty much to rule out a venous disease.
Okay. I'm sure they have x-rays and all kinds of things. If the veins aren't visible, don't look prevalent. So what do you do when they come into your office? Do you do an ultrasound? How do you determine if you can't see the vein? How do you determine this? And then what?
Well, venous disease has different stages. Like most conditions, it has different stages. You may not see a vein, excuse me, but you may see some other sign. It could be a coloration change. It could be small, excuse me, little telangiectasias or spider veins. It could be the condition of the skin. And in later stages, it could even be skin breakdown or spontaneous bleeding from little tiny veins on the surface. But we always, if we're entertaining chronic venous disease as a diagnosis, we always do an ultrasound. And that really is the key. You have to look at both what you see on the surface and what you cannot see to try to determine the source of the symptoms. So an ultrasound, sometimes we need more advanced imaging in some more rare circumstances where there might be concern that some of the issues stem from venous disease further up into the pelvis or the abdomen, and we might have to rely on other imaging techniques to take a look in that area as well. But as a standard, ultrasound is needed.
We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we will talk about if there are treatments that people can do at home and not have medical intervention, and are they ever dangerous, where if they're left untreated, it could be a serious condition. Stay with us. We'll be right back right after this. If you'd like to hear this show again, visit WVOMFM.com and listen to it in podcast form. We'll be back shortly with Dr. Stephen Nightingale. Stay with us. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk, Dr. Stephen Nightingale discussing vein care. Dr. Nightingale, are varicose veins dangerous if left untreated? If someone's not having symptoms, they don't need any intervention that way. Should they still get them treated? Can they get worse?
Well, varicose veins usually over time will get worse. As I said, we have a lot of patients that come in, don't have symptoms, they just need reassurance, and it's not a life-threatening condition by any means if it's in these early stages. But we do know that over time, the patients will be back, the disease will progress, and as it reaches more of its final stages, then it can lead to a lot of morbidity as far as skin breakdown, infections, ulcerations, et cetera. So it's that population that we try or urge to really start to take control of the condition.
How does someone do that? What are things that they, let's say they have a milder condition, they don't want it to get worse. What are some of the things that they can do at home to maybe prevent this from escalating?
I think it boils down to what are the risk factors and what is modifiable and what isn't. We know that women tend to be at higher risk than men. We know that there's hereditary factors. So obviously, those are things that are not modifiable, but if someone is overweight, if someone is a smoker, if someone is not physically active, we encourage them, to take control of that situation because it always seems to help. They can also, and we usually encourage at every stage for patients to wear compression therapy. This does tend to help reduce the pooling of blood and then the further distension of these veins and progression. And the more exercise the patient gets involved in, the more blood flow out of the leg, the more the symptoms usually improve. So there are a number of non-interventional sort of approaches that can be taken. And we try to encourage patients, whether they're going to have an intervention or not, to take control of the risk factors that they have control over.
Are there any dietary things that can help veins, like eating more fruits and vegetables or things that support vein health?
There's no specific dietary recommendation. Indirectly, weight loss, which is connected to diet. There is a natural supplement that, or a couple of them, whether it's grape seed extract or medication called Vascularia, which is an extract from the rind of a grapefruit that does have anti-inflammatory effects on venous disease. So in later stages, particularly in ulcer patients, we do recommend that patients use some of these natural products. They do seem to help with healing and wound healing, but a specific diet, just a healthy diet.
And so people may be thinking, I don't want to disrupt my veins any more than they have been. So taking a walk or riding a bike might be detrimental, but in reality, that's going to help because that increases circulation. Is that what you're saying?
That is correct. We have what we call a venous pump in our legs. If you think about it, legs are dependent. Gravity is always pulling when we're erect, blood to the floor. And the trick for the venous system is pushing blood against gravity back to the heart. So the venous pumps, such as in the calf, are responsible for that, along with the small valves that we mentioned. So the more these muscles are engaged, the more blood is going to flow against gravity back up towards the heart.
And the smoking. Smoking's never good under any circumstances, but what does smoking do to your veins?
Well, for quite some time, we didn't know if there was a direct link, unlike with arterial disease like coronary disease. But more recent research does definitely seem to indicate that smoking is a risk factor. We know it causes changes in the compliance of the vessel, which is not helpful. And also, we now feel that venous disease, although there's a mechanical component, does have an inflammatory component, much like arterial disease. And even though this is on the micro level in the valve areas, smoking does have an inflammatory effect on these valves, which does start to initiate the malfunction process of the valve. So obviously, smoking cessation is encouraged in all patients with both arterial and venous disease.
I've heard of vein stripping as a treatment for varicose veins. What does that involve? And is that your typically your go-to for varicose veins?
Well, vein stripping is an older approach to treatment of chronic venous insufficiency. It's rarely used at this point any longer. That's a procedure where the patient was actually in the operating room under anesthesia, had a long recovery. Most patients now can be treated with minimally invasive procedures done right in the office. And in most cases, there can be no downtime. They can go back to work the same day if they need to. There are exceptions depending on whether we're doing any microsurgical procedures like phlebectomy or injecting what we call sclerosants. But for the most part, these procedures are all done in an outpatient setting these days. So stripping is reserved really for the very unusual cases that can't be done easily in an outpatient setting.
That's really good to know. I'm thinking of someone who may have varicose veins, but maybe they had an aunt who had the vein stripping and it was a bad experience and they're hesitant. So knowing that that is just old technology would have to be reassuring. And things have changed so much now with medical intervention than 20 years ago, 30 years ago. We are going to take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk about wound care. And what can be done about that if someone is experiencing this and how they can perhaps prevent getting a wound on their leg. Stay with us. We will be back with Dr. Nightingale right after this. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk, Dr. Stephen Nightingale. If you want to reach him, you can call 667-5064. That is the Bucksport Regional Health Center Ellsworth office where he practices, 667-5064. If you're having any of these issues and would like to be treated by Dr. Nightingale. So when we left, I said that we would talk about wound care. So this is venous wounds. What is a venous wound and how does that happen? What can cause that?
Well, when you look at the effects of chronic venous insufficiency, meaning valvular dysfunction, blood kind of pooling in those veins in the legs and not recirculating like it's supposed to, then oxygen levels tend to drop in the tissues in the lower part of the leg. Now, the normal circulation pattern is arterial blood that's oxygenated goes from the heart to the toe, and then venous blood returns from the toe to the heart to be replenished. And if that cycle is disrupted, then the tissues, particularly in the lower part of the leg and foot, will have less oxygen. And that can promote tissue breakdown, which eventually leads to a venous ulcer. And venous ulcers can certainly be a problem. They can become infected, particularly if they become deeper. Bone can become infected. It can lead to a number of, fairly problematic conditions that can take quite some time to treat. So as a venous clinic, we're a member of the wound team, if you would. It takes, in some cases, surgeons, it takes the wound care nurses, it takes the clinic such as mine that works on venous disease. all kind of in concert to really help this patient heal their wounds and to prevent them from coming back is one of the biggest issues.
What can prevent them to begin with? Is there something that someone can do? Is the exercise and not smoking and all of that, does that go along with this to really help prevent getting this wound in the first place?
All of those modifiable risk factors, if the patient engages in that, will definitely help. The key, however, is treating venous disease before it gets to that stage. And that's the secret of wound care, is preventing it in the first place. But once we get to that stage, then it really does require a concerted effort amongst the team. There are a number of, again, office-based procedures that we do to try to reroute the blood flow and improve the efficiency of the blood flow to these areas so that oxygen is restored, which is a critical component to the healing process.
So is it safe to say that these wounds are not going to heal up on their own?
There are, without venous intervention, no, some wounds will heal. What we found is that healing is usually quicker and recurrence of the wounds is less if we can actually improve the venous circulation. There are a number of patients, however, that with proper wound care, as far as topical wound care, compression therapy, they'll eventually get healing. We end up seeing patients who tend to get caught in this cycle of a wound that heals and then opens back up, heals and opens, and it's just a never-ending cycle. And they need more than just the conventional treatment.
Who's at the highest risk for getting a wound such as this? I mean, if people have varicose veins now, should they be concerned that this could happen if they don't take action now?
Certainly, as I said, there's different stages of the disease, and varicose veins is one of those stages. But I don't want to imply that everyone who has a varicose vein is going to have a venous wound. That is not correct. And that's one of the reassuring factors of the evaluation for most people, because that's what they're thinking of. However, patients who may have had a previous clot in their leg and have chronic valvular dysfunction, patients that have chronic swelling, lymphedema, really have impairment of this circulatory profile that we talked about. Those patients are definitely at risk, and it's important to try to identify them early and try to intervene before we ever reach that stage.
We are out of time. Dr. Nightingale, this has been very enlightening. Again, if you'd like to hear this show again, log on to WVOMFM.com and hear it in podcast form. And the number to call is 207-667-5064 if you would like an appointment with Dr. Nightingale. Again, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time to discuss all of this with my listeners. That's it for me. This is Senior Talk. Thank you so much for listening.